Hello and welcome to this session on essential Windows Azure IaaS for developers. And my name is Vishwas Lele from Applied Information Sciences. I'm really excited to present this session to you, especially since the infrastructure as a service went GA last week and there are lots of things to talk about. So let's get started. And before we dive into the session, a quick reminder that the Azure Boot Camp is on the 27th, so take advantage of the camp. And before I get into the capabilities of infrastructure as a service, I thought it would be useful to motivate this topic. Why do I think it is important for developers to understand infrastructure as a service? And the first motivation is that this is the first time in the industry we have the ability to acquire a hardware resource as a programming API. So you can fire off an API, get yourself a virtual machine. Well, that's cool. How does it help? Well, it helps us build more cost-conscious systems. And what do I mean by that? Traditionally, capacity planning exercise has been really hard to achieve. So we end up over-provisioning or under-provisioning systems. And in fact, there was a study out there which talked about a large number of software projects fail because of their resource constraint, which means they did not have enough resources. Or if they had resources, they probably acquired too much and it was too expensive to run that. So by having the ability to program a resource and then dynamically getting a resource and then dynamically deprovisioning it, we have the ability to make a more cost-conscious system. So cost is one thing, of course. We also have the ability to build more agile systems. What do I mean by that? So if you are asked to architect an enterprise-class application, you will go in and try to design it, and maybe you figure out that database is going to be a bottleneck. So you decide to take precaution, and you maybe do some kind of a sharding. You acquire all the hardware resources. You acquire all the software resources. But the system goes live. The business users want that system to be caching most of that content, not getting the content from the database. And now, because you can program resources dynamically or provision resources dynamically, you can very quickly adapt to what the business requirements are. And then finally, you are able to build more fault-tolerant systems. So the common wisdom is that all systems of any size are eventually going to see some kind of a failure. And it does not matter how long of an exception handler you write, or what class of machine you use, you will end up seeing some kind of a failure. And the only way out of that is not to get very associated with one piece of hardware, which means if something goes wrong, you can write off a program, detect that failure, provision another machine, and move your code onto a different machine. So if you agree with these motivations for why infrastructure as a service is important, you'll probably also agree that as developers, we need to keep all of these things in mind and take advantage of these things as we are designing our applications and not just leave it to the deployment stage of the application. So with that objective behind us, let's quickly look at the agenda slide. And I'm going to be breaking up my session into four parts, talk about Windows Azure IaaS, why should you be doing IaaS, and then review a quick concepts, and then we'll spend a fair amount of time looking at some of the scripts. And then I have a couple of scenarios that I've built out, which I'll also like to demonstrate to you. So what is infrastructure as a service? And I'm sure you've seen a slide many times in cloud computing terms where you see the data center on the one column, and then you see infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and then you see software as a service. And that slide is essentially showing you in many ways the maturity model of cloud computing. And I happen to think of infrastructure as a service slightly differently. I think of infrastructure service really as a first-class service. So if you think of database as a service, for example, and for example, you go to the SQL Azure database and provision yourself a SQL Azure database, you really don't care whether it is running on a piece of hardware or which version of the database it is running. You are interested in consuming the database capability as it becomes available to you. And similarly, if you think of Azure websites, the session previous to me, as a service, It's much similar in concept. You provision a website, and you don't care where the hardware it is located or what version of operating system it is running on. You simply consume the website capability. And I submit to you that infrastructure service is similar, except you are making an API call, getting a hardware resource, and then where that hardware resource is located, which data center, which rack is not your concern. Okay, so this is the definition of infrastructure service in generic terms. Let me map this definition into Windows Azure platform terms. So let me go out to the presentation mode here for a second. And let's progress to the next slide. Let's come out to the presentation mode. And you see a blank side, of course. And for people who are getting started with Windows Azure platform and see this big slide with all the services, sometimes it can be daunting. So I thought for the purposes of my session, I'm just going to build out a very simple slide that covers the areas that I'm going to focus on. So the very basic is you have a bunch of data centers around the world. There are 8 Windows Azure data centers around the world. And then on top of these data centers, you have things such as virtual machines, which is the thing that we're going to talk about a lot. Then on top of that, you have storage. And we have something called the Windows Azure storage, and part of that is the blob storage. And we will see later that this is where our virtual machines are stored. And then finally, you have some kind of a networking. So together, which is known as the virtual network in Windows Azure parlance, so together these three building blocks constitute what I'm going to talking about, what I'm going to be talking about, which is infrastructure as a service. So let's get back to the slides here. And let me go back to my mode here. And so before we look at the code, there's one other thing that I would like to talk about, which is where have I seen infrastructure as a service being used? And as you know, the infrastructure as a service has been available to us for a few months in a preview mode. And here are some examples which I've come across and talking to other folks in the community. The first and foremost is a virtual branch office scenario. So most of the organizations have some kind of a data center already, or they have some kind of a hosted facility. And what virtual branch office allows you to do really is extend your data center out in the cloud so that when you need additional machines temporarily, you can go out and provision it. We are seeing that as an important scenario. And VMs on demand is another very important workload. And I can't tell you how many times I have myself used the VMs on demand capability. The other day, I was doing a presentation related to SharePoint and BI, found out at the last minute that my machine was not handling the demo very well. I uploaded my VHD file to the cloud and then provisioned myself an extra large instance, conducted the demo, and then deprovisioned that machine. And I can give you many other instances. Folks are using VMs on demand for dev and test scenario as well. So here are some use cases why infrastructure service is important. Let's quickly review a few concepts, which I'm going to be calling upon through the rest of my presentation. And very quickly, just so that we are on the same page. Subscription is a concept. So when you are working with Windows Azure, you set up an account with Windows Azure, and then you can create a bunch of subscriptions. It's important for my session because when I start coding, you will see that I'll be coding at a subscription level. A cloud service, you may be familiar with this already if you've worked with web and worker roles. Cloud service is a collection of virtual machines. The only interesting thing I would like to add to that is all of these virtual machines are connected to one common load balancer. Roles are like virtual machines, as you have a web and worker role. And for the purpose of this discussion, we are going to be focusing on the persistent VM role, which means it's a virtual machine which persists your changes. We already talked about the blob storage, which is the home for your VHD files. Quick point about endpoints and VIP. So VIP is the public-facing IP address for any machines that you deploy. And there's an analogous concept as DIP, which is dynamic IP address, which is the internal IP address. And then, of course, you have the service management API. This is how you program against the Windows Azure portal, get yourself resources, etc. So with that said, let me jump into PowerShell here very quickly. This is a session for developers after all, so I don't want to spend too much time. Let's just jump into code right away. So one thing you should note is that all the authentication in Windows Azure is based on X509 certificates. So you install a part of certificate on Windows Azure, and then you install the other part of the certificate on the client machine, and you send it as part of the HTTP request, and that's how you're authenticated. And there are some easy ways to get yourself set up. And in particular, there's a commandlet called get or publish settings, which is easy to get started. But if you're doing more with the automation and scripting, you want to explicitly set up the certificates. So what you see here, and I'm going to make this code available on GitHub after my presentation, either today or tomorrow. So what you see happening here is, and even if you're new to PowerShell, I'm doing an include statement right here, and I define a bunch of variables. And then I have an include statement right here, and in this include statement, I define all of my connection parameters. In fact, let me bring in the include file, and notice here that I have a bunch of parameters that I define, the subscription name, thumbprint, password, etc. And you would, when you have this code, you can fill it in with the appropriate information. And then once I have the connection information defined, the next thing I'm going to do is set the subscription. We talked about this. The next thing we are going to do is define an image. And Scott earlier showed us the gallery, which had a bunch of images that Microsoft is providing. And you can certainly add your image to that as well. I'm going to select a Windows Server 2008 R2 image. And then the next thing I'm going to do is supply a bunch of configuration information. And again, the syntax here is not important. The code will be available to you, so you can take a look at it when you get a chance. But the important thing to note here is I provide a machine name. I provide an instance size. Is it a small instance, a medium instance, a large instance? I supply some user ID and password. And then once all of the configuration data is available, I simply call this last command, which is the new Azure VM right here, which is going to go off and provision this virtual machine for me. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and run this command, and it is going to ask me if I want to remove the previous service. I want to. And this script is going to take about 4 or 5 minutes to run. And I did not want to wait for the script to complete. This session is about 55 minutes or so. So what I did was, before I got started with this session, I ran the exact same script, except I appended letter B as in backup to the cloud name and the VM name. So if I go back to the portal here, and let's just zoom in right here, you will see that I just provisioned this machine, Azure Conf VM 1B, right here. In fact, let's just go ahead and RDP into this machine. I might have a session to that already to save us some time. And right now, if you notice up at the top, I am RDP'd into that machine. Now, what is interesting is, if I write anything on this machine to the C drive, in fact, you can see here, I have the C drive, which is back to the blob storage. And then I have the D drive, which is my temporary drive. And this is the drive that is attached to the virtual machine. And if your machine fails, this drive is going to go away, so it's transient. And you have the C drive. So if I wrote something to the C drive, it is going to be propagated to the blob storage. Okay. So in fact, let's do something interesting. Let's just go to the blob storage here very quickly. And I have set up the connection information. And let me go ahead and refresh the VHDs container, which is the default location for all my VHDs. So let's go ahead and refresh this here. And you will notice now that my machine that we just provisioned right here is located here. And just so make sure you all believe me, it is 4:23 and of course it's the GMT. So it's 4 hours ahead, okay? So what I can do, let's see if our machine got provisioned, the script that we fired. Looks like our script did complete successfully, okay? Which is good. So I want to go back to the blob storage tool here and let me refresh. And my machine should show up here somewhere. And yes, indeed it does, right here. This is my machine, it showed up here. I'm going to do something interesting. Now, this machine, this VHD file is powering the machine that I just created. I'm going to just copy this file here. Let's just copy it to a temporary location. And I'm going to copy it to another container called temp. And let's just do that. And here the copy operation succeeded. So let me go back to the temp folder. Let's refresh. And my VHD file just got copied. Everybody can see that here. So this is my VHD file. It just got copied. Let me grab a URL to this VHD file. Let's just do a blob copy. And I'm going to go back to my PowerShell script. And this time, instead of creating a machine through the template, let's just create a machine using the disk that was just created. So I have another PowerShell script here. And in this case, the only difference between the two scripts is that rather than specifying this machine name, the template name right here, I'm going to specify a disk. And I already have a disk. I'm going to delete that right here. Let's just clean that up. And let's copy the new URL, which we just created. Okay. So rest of the script remains the same. We just, instead of an image, get a disk, supply all the configuration information, and create a new virtual machine. So let's go ahead and run the script also. And it is asking me if I want to delete the previous one. I want to. And let's just go ahead and run this. This will take 4 or 5 minutes to complete. If I go back to the portal here, the portal lags behind a little bit. So the machine that got successfully created is not showing up here. But of course, I can run a very quick command here to make sure I can see the syntax. And I'm getting an error. Oh, that's fine. It is just telling me that that VHD file already exists. So the way it works is when you copy the VHD file to another location and mount a virtual machine, it is actually acquiring a lease. And it's just telling me that there is another virtual machine by that name that has that lease, which is fine. The machine got created. And now let's just wait for the script to complete and then go back and see if this machine shows up here. Okay. So let's go back to the slide. So this is a very quick demo of how you would get started with PowerShell. In the last 2-3 minutes, very quickly, we created a machine from the template. And then we are in the midst of creating another machine using the disk. Okay? So keep those two concepts in mind. I'm going to call upon them shortly. So let's move forward. And this slide, I think I already covered. It is really talking about what are the different programming language choices. Of course, it's a REST API, so you can use any language of your choice. I'm going to be focusing on PowerShell. Why PowerShell? Because PowerShell is incredibly useful. Tons and tons of commandlets to cover all aspects of Windows. And moreover, any code that you write with infrastructure as a service, it is likely that you're going to be sharing it with DevOps or infrastructure specialists. So the PowerShell becomes that common language that all of these groups can coalesce on. If you are trying to do this on a cross-platform, there's also a Node.js-based SDK. And a quick shout out for if you're doing cross-platform stuff, there's something called the VM Depot, which is a great site for community-driven catalog of pre-configured images. Okay. So what just happened? A flurry of activity, wrote a script, called it an API, created a new virtual machine. What actually happened? And this slide really shows us what's happening. Let me get myself very quickly, get me a laser pointer here so I can walk you through this. What happened in the first demonstration was we wrote a script and said, please go to the gallery image. Please pick this image, 2008 R2 image. Copy this image to my storage account. And that's when it acquired the lease. And then once you've copied this to my storage account, use this VHD to boot up a virtual machine instance. And there are some interesting things happening. We only had the OS disk. We'll talk about data disk in a short time. But another interesting thing to note, and this comes up often, people have asked this question. So are you saying that everything I write on the disk is being sent to the cloud storage? And that is true, except there's a notion of caching here. And by default, on an OS disk, the caching is turned on, which makes sense because you want your paging file to be locally cached. On the other hand, if you have a data disk, you don't want to cache locally because what happens if there's a hardware failure? So data disk, you will see very shortly that the caching is turned off by default. So that's what's happening behind the covers as we ran that script. Let's see how our script is doing. Going to PowerShell, looks like that script succeeded. Let's go back to the portal. And you can see here in the portal that both my virtual machines are now available. And this one is starting up, of course. The other one is running. Okay. All right. Let's go back to the slides. And so you have now a basic understanding of how PowerShell works, how you authenticate against the Windows Azure portal. But what I have found useful in trying to understand the API is to think of infrastructure as a service as an object model. So, you know, it is not, if you go check the documentation, you won't find any references to the object model. This is my way of thinking of my data center as an object model, and I'll tell you why. So let me get myself my highlighter back here. I shouldn't have let it go. So here's my highlighter. And so the cloud service, as you know, is a container of virtual machines. One cloud service can have one or two deployments. So if you've worked with web or worker roles, you know that there is a staging and a production slot. Only thing to note about the infrastructure services that you only have the production slot. And within that deployment, you have a bunch of roles, and roles are virtual machines. So you get the idea. So why do I think it is important to understand and think of this as an object model? For example, you should note that the virtual network and the DNS servers are defined at the deployment level, not at the virtual machine level. So these kinds of details are important to understand as you start programming. So I encourage you to understand the key objects and their relationship. Okay. Similarly, if you have a role, can have a network configuration set. Each configuration set can have multiple ports or multiple endpoints defined. We will be looking at an example of this, and I'm going to go through this quickly. Each role can have one OS disk, can have two data disks, etc. So, and then, of course, based on whether you're provisioning a Windows machine or a Linux machine, you can have a Windows configuration set versus the Linux configuration set. Okay? So think about this object model in mind. It'll help you get started with this programming. Let's talk about licensing. And I'm not going to talk about the cost because it's well documented on the website. But let's talk about licensing. So who is paying for the license of the operating system? Turns out that the license cost for the OS is built into the hourly cost. So what about SharePoint and Exchange? Well, there's something called the license mobility, where you can take your volume license and then take that and apply it to the cloud. You can certainly do that. What about third-party applications, you ask? Well, you have to go check with the vendor. And what we are finding is that many vendors are adhering to an hourly cost model. And in fact, if you look at the GA announcement from last week, SQL Server team is certainly doing that. You can use their image and then pay them an hourly price. And again, you can check up the pricing on the website. Okay, so next, let's talk about an important concept. And hopefully the demonstration that we did earlier, you know, copying the blob files, et cetera, will help us understand this very quickly. So ultimately, under the covers, all of this virtualization is based on the VHD format. And this VHD format is part of the open specification promise. And this is what enables portability. So you can create a Hyper-V instance on this laptop, move it up to the cloud, and other way around. So there's a concept of image which needs to be understood. The concept of image is that it is only a read-only template, and it does not have any user or computer-specific settings, and it is generalized or sys-prepped, as people will call it. And then you can choose from any of the gallery images, or you can bring your own. So you can, you know, create your own virtual machine, generalizes or sys-prep it, upload it, and it will appear as a template or an image. And then in addition to the image, you have something called the disk, where disks are really files, and we have seen an example of this. These are files stored in blob containers. And they can be based on your on-premise or cloud. And there can be two types of disks, an OS disk, which is 127 gigs, and a data disk. And it's important to understand this because data disk is typically where you would install your, put your SQL Server data files. And unlike the OS disk, a data disk can be 1 terabyte. And then you can have multiple of those depending on the size of the machine you're provisioning. I think you can go all the way up to 16 terabytes. You can stripe it, and you can have size of up to 16 terabytes. And keep in mind the local caching option that I talked about, OS disk on by default, data disk off by default. So how do you protect the data? Now that we've talked about the blob storage, how do you protect the data? What happens if there's a hardware failure? Of course, disk failures account for the most failures in a data center. So how do you protect against such failures? Well, we've already seen that the OS and data disks send all the updates to Windows Azure Storage. Windows Azure Blob Storage maintains three copies of your VHDs. You only pay for one, but they keep three copies. And what is interesting is it's not just redundancy that we are talking about. These copies are load balanced as well. So think of this, that you're really getting three virtual spindles for your disks. And in case of failure, so what happens in case of failure? You simply take your VHD file and move it to another location or bring that virtual machine up. And keep in mind the difference in caching, as I said earlier. In fact, there's a very nice PowerShell commandlet that makes it super simple for you to take your virtual machines from one data center to another. And this is how it works. You basically stop the virtual machine, then you export all of the configuration into an XML file. So it can get quite cumbersome. OS disk, multiple data disk, watch ports are open, etc. You don't want to recreate all that information. So it captures all that in a configuration file. And then once you have that, at a later point in time, you can recreate or import that virtual machine in another location or another data center. And in fact, I have a very quick script here to show you. I'm going to export import. And let's do this. See if our machine is running. Indeed, our machine is running. So I'm going to go back to my PowerShell script. And let's just look at the script here for a moment. And I'm interested in talking about this right here. So I'm going to stop my virtual machine, which is right here. I'm going to then export all of my configuration, and then I'm going to remove my virtual machine. And this is important. You stop paying charges only after you have removed your virtual machine. Just shutting that virtual machine is not enough. So let me go ahead and run the script. And like we have done up until now, we are not going to wait for it to complete. At some point, an XML file will be created, and then we can recreate that at a later point in time. Let's just go back to the slides. So we looked at export import, and this makes it really easy for you to delete and recreate. So the two scenarios that are enabled, I hope you understand. One is that you have a failure and you want to recreate, and the other one is where you are being cost conscious and you want to get rid of some machines off hours and then recreate them when your customers come back online. So you can achieve both of these scenarios using simple import-export scripts. Okay, so how do you ensure availability? Up until now, we have talked about data protection. How do you ensure availability? Well, you ensure availability through the concept of availability set, which is really about intelligent placement of your machines. In fact, in order to take advantage of the SLA, you have to put your machines in an availability set, and I'll show you an example of that shortly. So what really happens is when you tell Windows Azure Fabric Controller that you want availability set, it is going to put your machines across two different racks to minimize failure. And then in addition to availability set, you have this concept of a load balance set, which means if one of the nodes in your web server dies, the traffic would automatically be routed to the node that is up and running. And you also have the ability to install custom probes, which means you can poll a machine. If the machine is not responding twice, it will send traffic to the other node. Okay? So that's how you do availability. Custom probes, I've talked about this already. And in fact, let's just go to the portal. It might be useful to just see how this is, the availability sets work. And I'm going to go into one of the virtual machines here, which I already created. And I'm going to show you the script in a moment. Let's just go into this virtual machine, go into the endpoints. And you will notice here that this machine has a bunch of endpoints. Port 80 is load balanced right here, as you can see right here, it is load balanced. And then also, if I go into the configuration tab here, and let's just zoom into this, you will see that both my machines are part of an availability set, okay? So that's how I will get the additional reliability, okay? Let's go back to the slide. The last concept that I want to talk about, we talked about storage, we talked about compute, the last concept, important concept that I want to talk about, and then we will look at some of the additional demos, is virtual network. So much like you have virtualization of compute through the virtual machines provided by IaaS, you have virtualization of network as well. What does it offer? It allows you to connect multiple virtual machines. It, in fact, allows you to connect multiple cloud services, right? A cloud service, within a cloud service, all the machines can see each other, we know that. But now, through the virtual network, you can connect multiple cloud services as well. You also have the ability to persist IP addresses. Remember, I talked about the dynamic IP addresses. Every time you get a machine, you reboot a machine, you'll get a new dynamic IP address. If you want to persist an IP address, you can make it part of a virtual network. And I think Scott showed you a demo where he was creating a virtual machine. He said, do you want it to be a part of a virtual network? If you do that, you get persistent IP address. The other thing it offers is it allows you to partition your address space into subnets. And then it does DNS resolution, as you would expect. And the last but not the least, it allows you to connect your data center with the Windows Azure data center, in the process establishing a tunnel between the two. So you have seamless access to the machines in the cloud. Okay? And we will see that in action shortly. So you can create hybrid applications. Now, one important thing, and this is where I think developers have such an important role to play. To be successful in infrastructure as a service, automation is key. It's really the holy grail of infrastructure as a service. And you can, of course, RDP into a machine like I did and install some software, but that's not very scalable or repeatable. You might argue that, well, I can install all the software, I can sysprep that image, make it a template image, and then boot my machines off of that. That's certainly true. But in some cases, generalization is not supported after you've installed a certain piece of software. So what do you do then? In such situations, the solution is Windows Remote Management, or WinRM. And this is a cool new capability that was announced last week. So what you do is you wait for your machines to reboot, or boot, I should say. Then you get a connection string to the remote management, WinRM connection string. And then you install a certificate so your communication with this virtual machine is secure. And once you've installed the certificate, you can then use any WinRM command to provision, run web installer, install any software, configure the virtual machine as you see fit. Okay? So this is going to be the key. This is an important pattern to understand. In fact, let me do this. Let me bring up a script here that I wrote to show you this. And I created a load balanced. I provisioned two virtual machines. I showed you one of them. Let me go to the portal here really quickly. And I showed you that these are my two machines, IS1 and IS2. They are part of the availability set. We saw that. And they are also part of the load balance set. Let's see what it took to create these virtual machines. So let me go back to the scripting environment here. And what you'll find interesting is many of you are probably using Windows Workflow Foundation in some capacity. And I found out that PowerShell 3.0 supports Windows Workflow Foundation. So what I did here was take advantage of the workflow. And let's just start at the bottom of the script right here. Create a load balanced IIS configuration, and I supply some subscription information. I run the include file, which gives me all of my subscription information. And then let's go up to the top and let's see what's happening here. So this is my workflow activity right here. And I get my subscription name, right? And I supply a bunch of information about my virtual machines. And then I supply some configuration information right here. And let's just talk about this for a second here. This is my configuration information for the one of the virtual machines. And notice here that I specify a load balance set. And if I could go to the right here and then zoom, you will be able to see it better. So you can see here, I specify a load balance name. I specify a probe path, etc. Okay, and I do that for my second virtual machine right here. Go down here, do it for the next virtual machine as well. And then once I have the configuration information, I'm going to provision these two machines. And the only interesting part here, which is new, which is wait for these machines to boot. And once these machines boot up, then the interesting stuff happens. Then I go in here, and let's just zoom into this also. Then I get myself the connection endpoint for WinRM. And the next thing I do is install the certificate, as I said earlier. And the last thing I'm going to do is take advantage of the workflow and run two activities in parallel. So now I have both my virtual machines provisioned, and I'm going to go install, configure IIS on these machines. I'm going to use the web platform installer to do that. And once this workflow completes, I would have a load balanced availability set defined to machines. In fact, let's just do this. Go back to the virtual machine here and let's drill into one of the virtual machines. Let's look at the endpoints. I think we already looked at this one. And what I did here was I created a load balanced endpoint, as you can see here, and I also created a not load balanced endpoint. Okay, what does it mean? Well, I put port 80 as load balanced. So if IIS-1 goes down, my site is up, but port 9000 is not load balanced. So if IIS-1 goes down and I browse to 9000, I won't get access to this. So let's see if we can make this happen. And right here, let's just go to this machine and let me grab the DNS address and let's just zoom into this and let's just go to the website right here. And of course it brings up the address, right? And I'm going to shut this thing down here. And if I go back here and just specify port 9000, let's just do that. Specify port 9000, it shows me IIS-1. And if I specify port 900, it gives me IIS-2. Okay, so let's do this something interesting here. I'm going to go in and actually shut down one of the machines. Let's just shut this machine down. And it is going to ask me, are you sure you want to shut this down? Yes. And this will take a few seconds to show up. And if once I've shut this machine down, and if I go back to my URL, and just to make sure everybody sees this, if I go to this URL right here, once my shutdown is complete, let's see if the process is complete, it's still stopping it. If I refresh it, you will see that I continue to get my traffic because my load balancer has now sent all the traffic to IIS-2. On the other hand, if I go to the 9000 node, I should get a failure, or depending on what state of my shutdown it is right now. Looks like the site is not coming up. And in fact, let me do this. Let me bring up 900 while we wait for this. And here is my 900 port. And this one continues to work just fine. This one the other one is still thinking. And in fact, looks like the machine was indeed shut down. So you get the idea. I was able to take advantage of the availability set and the load balance set. One of the ports was load balanced, the other port was not. Okay. So let's do this. Let's go back to the slides here. And I have one other demonstration to do for you. Since our machines are up now, I'm going to go back to PowerShell. And I want to show you a cool little trick, so remember that we created this virtual machine here. And if I went into the disk manager here, and I can't zoom into this very well, so you might have to squint a little bit. But you can see here that once I RDP'd into this machine, I had the C drive, which is powered by the blob storage, and then transient drive. And those are the only two drives I have available to me. And to sort of further this concept of object model that I've been talking about, let me show you a little snippet here. I'm going to go ahead and add, so let me zoom into this, this will make it easier. I'm going to go ahead and add 128 gig data disk to my existing virtual machine, okay? And if I run this script right here, and if this runs successfully, we should be able to go back to our machine and see that disk show up. And it'll take a few seconds for that to happen. I want to make sure I can go back here and show you this demo. So it looks like, as you can see, port 9000 is not available because I shut IIS down. On the other hand, my website here continues to run just fine, okay? So let's see, let's go back to the RDP session here and see if the script completed. It's not yet completed. Let's go back to the PowerShell, and it is still running, okay? So we'll come back to that in a second. Let me use the last 11 or 12 minutes that are left to walk you through some scenarios that I've already set up. And then if we have time, we'll come back to this remote desktop sessions, and then I will take some questions, left about last 10 minutes for questions. Okay, so let's go back to my description here. This is the first scenario that I want to talk about. This is the virtual branch office scenario that I said is really important. So think of this as your on-premise data center, on-premises data center, and has a bunch of machines, has Active Directory. And what I've done next is established a virtual network based IP tunnel to a set of machines in the cloud. And in the cloud, I have a bunch of servers. I have IIS server, bunch of other servers. And then what Windows Azure does is, so this is typically a hardware device, a Cisco or Juniper device. And in addition to this device, you have the gateway device, which Windows Azure will provision for you. Okay. And once this tunnel has been set up, you can simply go to the Active Directory and then replicate your Active Directory to the Windows Azure data center. So, you could do something like this here. Okay. So what I'm going to show you next, and let me get myself my pen back here. So what I'm going to do next, and you look at this carefully because I'm going to be doing some RDPs here. I want to make sure you all understand this. So this is my Reston office right here somewhere. And this is, of course, the East Coast data center, Windows Azure data center. And today I'm doing my presentation here somewhere in Redmond. The first thing I'm going to do is RDP into one of the boxes here. Okay. In fact, we are going to RDP into the read-only domain controller in the cloud. And then once we have RDP'd into this box, we are then going to RDP back into my Reston office. Okay. So two levels of RDP going on, just be careful. And let's bring up that session right here. And let me show that to you in the portal. And I have a bunch of machines here. And the nomenclature that I've used here, anything that is prefixed with AZ is your Azure machine, of course. And then I have two sets of machines. I also deployed these machines in the East Coast data center, and I also deployed a bunch of machines in the West Coast data center. So what I mean here, just so everybody is clear, in addition to this data center, I also deployed everything to a West Coast data center. And I established a tunnel here, I also established a tunnel to the West Coast data center here as well. Okay. So now that we understand what the setup is like, let's go RDP into this machine. And I'm going to RDP into AZAD01. And I believe I have a session already open there. I'm going to close a bunch of windows here so we can see this carefully. Look up at the top. I'm in AZAD, which is my Azure Active Directory box. Let me bring all of the other machines down here. So the first thing I'm going to do is run a simple ping test. Okay. So as I said earlier, I have established a tunnel to the East Coast data center, and I've established a tunnel to the West Coast data center. So let's run a ping, and I can see here, I can both ping the East Coast data center and West Coast data center. And one thing I neglected to mention, and probably is confusing, so let me just slide this bar here. So in fact, there are two levels of RDP going on. I RDP'd into the Active Directory box on Windows Azure, and from there I RDP'd into a box in Reston, Virginia, which is the OP, which stands for the on-premise machine. And then I'm right now in the on-premise machine, and through the on-premise machine, I set up a ping back to the East Coast, and if I press any key here, you will see me pinging to the West Coast data center as well. And just to be sure everybody's following along, let me just very quickly bring up the virtual network tab here. And you can see here, I have two virtual networks set up, one for the East Coast and one for the West Coast. Let's just take a quick look at the East Coast data center and go into the dashboard. You will see here, once it refreshes, this green means my Reston-based VPN device is connected to the Azure East Coast data center. And you can see a bunch of information. You will see all the machines that are part of this virtual network. If I go into the configuration tab, you will see that, you know, bunch of subnets have been defined. I can, you know, break my address range into a bunch of subnets. I can say my front end goes to this subnet, my app servers go to the other subnet. I can do these kinds of things. And then I can specify the DNS servers, and then I can also specify my gateway address, etc. Okay, so this is, and if we drilled into the other virtual network, it would be exactly the same. Okay, let's go back into a remote desktop session, not to be confused here. Now, again, we are into the, we have logged on to the on-premise AD box, on-premises AD box, and I was able to ping the two machines. Let me do something else interesting here. I'm going to mount, I'm in my on-premises machine, and I'm going to mount a drive, map a drive to a box in the Windows Azure data center. Okay. And as you can see, I was easily able to mount it. So some of you are thinking, Vishwas, that is to be expected. Why are you so excited about this? And I will submit to you that the banality of this demo is what is comforting to the enterprise folks out there, right? The seamless way you can add these machines to your data center and be able to access this machine seamlessly is really important. So being able to map a drive to a Windows Azure box seamlessly is really important. And you probably know about the Azure Connect, which was available, which allowed you to connect machines between on-premises and Windows Azure data center. But Azure Connect required you to put some agent on that machine. And here, we really did not install any agent. Once we had the hardware VPN device, we were able to seamlessly go from one data center to another. Okay, so that's one quick thing I wanted to show you. Let me bring up, just so you can see here, let me bring up my Active Directory sites snap-in. And why am I showing you this? I'm showing you this because my on-premises AD is right here. Can see at the bottom, and then I have two read-only replicas, one in the East Coast and one in the West Coast. Okay, so that's how my replication is set up. And then the other thing I wanted to show you, let me go to the slide here for a second. So this concludes our first scenario, which is, you know, once you have this tunnel set up, you can, you know, add machines seamlessly to your data center. The other scenario that I want to talk about is once you have machines in the cloud in conjunction with machines on-premises, you ideally want a single pane of glass to manage these machines, right? You want to look at one management console and to be able to see what is running in the cloud, what is running in the data center. So fortunately, the System Center team has made a number of advancements which have made it Azure IaaS friendly. So if I go back to my remote desktop session, and just again, to be very clear, let me shut or, you know, collapse everything down. I'm back into my AD machine, okay, which has been my East Coast Azure AD box. And from this box, I'm going to remote desktop into a bunch of System Center machines. Let's just go get started with the Operations Manager machine. And it's taking a second to refresh. The Operations Manager is really cool. It allows me to monitor my machines. And right now, I'm monitoring the disk space on my virtual machines in the cloud. I can set up alerts. I can be notified if I'm running low on a certain resource. The other tool that I want to show you quickly is right here. Let's go back. The other tool I want to show you is the Configuration Manager, and this tool is important because what if I wanted to apply my patches to the virtual machines in the cloud? So right now it is showing me that endpoint protection has been applied to all of these machines in the cloud. And what is interesting is, notice at the bottom, it is showing me all the on-premises machines as well. So these are my Azure machines, and the bottom you can see my on-premises machines, and they have all based on the activity, they're active or inactive, they have endpoint protection applied. And the last thing I want to show you here before we stop for questions is the third tool, which is also very interesting, called the App Controller tool. And again, all of these tools are made possible because that VPN tunnel was set up. The last tool is the App Controller tool, which is also very interesting. It allows me to, what are the various services that are running in the cloud, what are the different virtual machines running in the cloud, my library of templates, I can manage all of that from this location here. Okay. So going back to the slides here very quickly, you can see that I can now manage my resources. So I have a seamless experience of managing machines locally and then managing in the cloud. And I showed you the ops manager, the configuration manager, which is the endpoint protection, et cetera, and I showed you the app controller. And before we go to the questions, I just want to see if our last demo did indeed work, which is, let's go back here for a second. And let's go back to this machine. And indeed, right here, the data disk that we added, the 128 gig data disk that we added, shows up here in this, and our PowerShell script succeeded. So with that, let me go back to the slide here. And bring this slide up again quickly, and let me take some questions. And let's duplicate this. So feel free to ask some questions. And if you can't get hold of me now, or if you don't get your question answered now, feel free to get in touch with me through my Twitter handle. And I encourage you to tweet questions with the AzureConf hashtag so that other members of the community can answer the questions as well. So let me try to go and see if I can answer a bunch of questions here. So the first question, can you explain the configuration commands? And this is a question by Watcher. Can you explain the configuration commands for an existing VHD that was uploaded? Well, the only command that I use there, instead of supplying an image parameter, and let's just go do that, instead of supplying, and this was the script, this was the image parameter right here. And again, I'm going to make the script available so you can see this for yourself. So I have, you know, when I say new Azure VM config, I supply an image name when I'm using a gallery image. And when I'm doing it from a disk, which is the question, I basically add a disk here, supply the name of the location of that disk, okay? And then I use this disk name in my configuration setting right here. Okay. And again, you should be able to look at the code yourself. I'll make it available soon. When deleting, so Naoki has this question, when deleting and recreating a virtual machine using the same OS disk, is it required to sysprep? No, it is not. So you've deleted a virtual machine, so your disk is protected. And you can come back in and recreate the virtual machine off of same disk. Sysprep is not required. And John has a question here. Can you add some discussion of how to provision systems requiring network isolation of tiers? Okay, so the John's question is, how can you isolate tiers? So, and I think he's talking about the subnets here. Let me bring this up here. Go into the virtual network tab. And I think John's question is, if you go into the dashboard tab here, it'll show you a bunch of subnets, the backend subnet, the presentation subnet, et cetera. And his question is, how can you, you know, create isolation? Unfortunately, today, the subnets are really a pool of IP addresses. There is no ACL protection on the subnets. So you can't do that today. Unfortunately, John, so we'll see what features are available later. So are there any other questions? I think I answered all of those questions right here. Okay, so very good. That gives me some additional time to go over some stuff right here. Let's just go back here. I wanted to call out a few things here, which I rushed through a bit quickly. And the first thing I want to call out here, let me just bring up the slides. And uh, And this is one section I had made a mental note in my mind that I went through rather quickly. So the key theme of my presentation really was think of your data center as an object model and how you can look at these objects and how you can traverse these objects, etc. So I have a few examples of to show you here. So let me go back into the PowerShell script. And let's go back into another file here. And one interesting thing about PowerShell, and I'm no expert on PowerShell by any means, and I learned it in the last few months, and I found it to be incredibly useful, so I encourage you to go take a look. One interesting thing I found about the PowerShell was, like any scripting language, you have, of course, the pipe operator, right? But unlike most scripting languages where the pipe operator is really sending the text across the pipe, in this case, you are actually sending object instances across the pipe. So you have the full fidelity object available to you, and you can inspect that object, do things with it. So let me show you a couple of examples. In this case, I want to, I'm running a command, get me all Azure services, and please print these characteristics right here. So I'm going to go run this. And while this command runs, it brings back all of my cloud services. It gives me my deployment name, the IP address that was assigned to it, and what state it is in, the status of the machine, etc. I can go one step further. I can say, don't just give me the virtual machines, or just don't give me the cloud service, but give me all of the virtual machines that are part of the cloud service. So I can run this command right here. And what this will do is, while this is running, you can see the get Azure service will return me a cloud service object. And then I go into the get Azure VM command, which will then iterate through the collection of all the VMs within the cloud service. And then I use the where object to filter that collection down. And then I use the format table command to print information about my virtual machines. Okay, so that's another example. Of course, we saw the OS disk example. And you can add an OS disk. I think there was a question earlier about that. How can you add the OS disk? Here's an example of that. And then last but not the least, quickly show you the import capability as well. So we did the export right here. And then if I go back to the portal, you should see that my machine, go back to the virtual machines here. And you can see here that my machine Azure Conf VM1 actually did get deleted and exported. The configuration file got exported. So if I go back here to the PowerShell, and let's just go back to this command here and just take a quick look at this command. Let me zoom into this again. I can simply take that configuration file that was created in the previous step, import it, and start the virtual machine. So let's go ahead and do that. Let me just clear this console so it's not cluttered. Let's just go ahead and run this. And this will now take all of that configuration information, take those VHD files that are stored in blob storage, and recreate my virtual machine. Yep. So with this, we come to the end of my session. And let me just bring up the last slide here. And I wanted to thank all of you for attending this session. And please send me any questions. I will make my code available to you shortly. There is one last question, and I have 30 seconds to go, so I'm going to take that. Can you access Windows WinForm applications using remote desktop? I see, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure that there's a technical reason you can't do that, but I'm not quite sure about how the licensing would work. So I would defer that question to the Windows Azure team, but that's a good question. So once again, thank you all for watching, and I appreciate your time. I hope you find your journey about programming the Windows Azure IaaS interesting and productive. Thank you very much.